This is Bob Soucy. The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon. As a runner myself representing the Flutie Foundation at the 2022 Boston Marathon, I'm proud to have been a teammate to many amazing Adaptive Program runners, achieving their dreams at the greatest race in the world. The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.com. To get involved.
The Bruins, the NHL. This is the show that's all hockey.
He scores!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, and Bob Beers on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
2 seconds left in this one, and the horn is going to sound. Tuukka Rask was brilliant tonight. Patrice Bergeron scored twice, both coming on the power play. The Boston Bruins again have come on the road to even a series at 2 games apiece. For the Blue Jackets, it's the first time they have lost on home ice here during the playoffs. It's going to be Game 5 in Boston on Saturday night.
And that's what we're here to get you ready for this morning. Welcome in to another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show from our Town Fair Tire Studios. Brian Johnston, joined by Judd Surratt and Bob Beers, who will have the call of very important Game 5 tonight over at TD Garden. And what should be a hell of an atmosphere tonight as we welcome the guys in this morning. Well, here we are again, tie series, another one that looks like it very well could go the distance, and the Bruins, they found a way. I mean, after getting down 2-1 in the series, Sergei Bobrovsky's been terrific. The top line hasn't been producing. A lot of questions about this team, and they found a way to win it the other night. How do they do it? What was the biggest key?
I think composure at the end of the day is. I do think that one of the themes that we've seen from the Bruins across the first 4 games is the way they've started. They've gotten off to good starts in the game. They were able to extend the lead. That was something they were unable to do in part because of Sergei Bobrovsky across the first 3 games. They did it in Game 4. But I think the other thing was, and this is what gets talked about as teams go later in the playoffs, being battle-tested, being able to play through certain situations that don't go your way. And clearly, without going down the rabbit hole just yet, the Bruins were able to play through a call that did not go their way, that allowed Artemi Panarin to score a goal and could have changed the outcome of that game. It certainly changed the way the game was played over the next maybe 20 minutes of regulation. But I think that's what it boils down to, and Tuukka Rask was the bedrock of the performance that night. Bob and I had talked about it, so the Bruins take the 1-0 lead, then they go on the power play, they allow a breakaway, Rask's, that gets called for a penalty shot, Rask faces that, then the Bruins score on the power play. What a huge change of events, but he was the bedrock of that performance the other night. And then the Bruins, because of their composure and the way they continue to play, I love the way they locked it down in the third period. Thought they had a great third period, and here we are, all tied at 2.
Was that one of the most? Was that the most entertaining first period you've ever seen?
It was. I mean,
because of all the crazy things that were going
on. It was bizarre more than anything else. But yeah, I mean, you came out of it. I said on Twitter, felt like that period aged me about 6 years.
God,
there was just so much happening, and not a lot of it not great, but. You know, it ends up working out.
During the broadcast, I mean, there were so many things going on, not just in the first period, but in the entire game. I mean, the Bruins had 2 breakaways in the second period, and we're trying to figure out who's getting a penalty on the breakaway by Coyle.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Right.
Could have been a slash by Harrington. It wasn't much. It didn't deserve a slash, but there was a penalty coming. Then Backes is running over the goaltender, and you're trying to figure out how that happened. And that was the cross check from Glendening. That was all in the second period. I mean, but the first period was so entertaining. There were so many things going on. Look, the Bruins need to clean some things up. I heard some people saying yesterday just that the Bruins, how great they played, and I'm I. I I don't subscribe to that. I thought they played great in the third period. But there's a lot that they need to clean up earlier in the game, and especially, you know, the second period. You know, first period on the power play they scored two goals, but did you feel comfortable when they were on the power play?
Well, no. I mean, we're all thinking the same thing when they were getting power plays after power play after power play, thinking, I'm not sure this is a good thing.
There's still a lot that needs to be cleaned up when they have the man advantage. They got a little careless in the second period, I thought. Third period was outstanding. I mean, they locked it down. It was, and they were the better team, and they were by far the better team in the third period. It seemed like Columbus didn't have anything left in the third. You know, they're talking about Columbus trying to wear the Bruins down. Columbus didn't have anything left in the third period, and the Bruins by far were the better team. So, you know, but there's some areas that need to be tighter. You know, for Boston moving forward, if they're going to win this thing.
I think a lot of it had to do with puck management. We saw that both on the man advantage and 5-on-5. The Blue Jackets were bringing a lot of pressure, especially in that second period. They started to amp up their speed a little bit. The Bruins had some hard times clearing, and because of that, they created some duress in their own zone, but Rask was able to clean everything up.
He was excellent.
Well, he's been a huge story in this playoff run, but especially in this series, because you look at the early part of this series, and so much of it was about how the Bruins are having trouble solving Bobrovsky, but at the same time, down the other end, Tuukka is playing really, really confidently right now.
Here's what I see with Bobrovsky as well. He's making spectacular saves. He almost got Pastrnak's goal.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a good piece of that, yep. And that just trickled across the line. He's making outstanding saves, but he's given up rebounds. There are pucks there for the Bruins. There are pucks there for the taking. And they got to them in the third period. Bergeron's goal. Corrales was a little different. But there are rebounds there for him. I mean, he's getting side to side, and he's making spectacular saves. And he's been outstanding in the series. Don't get me wrong. But there are some pucks there for the taking on rebounds.
And there have been times in this series where either the Bruins haven't had somebody there to take advantage of them,
right.
Or they have, but they haven't been able to do it. You know, there was in one of the overtimes, Bergeron had a couple of really prime chances in front of the net, just like, you know, wasn't able to get it
done. That was a double overtime game.
Yeah.
And that was the first overtime where he had two grade A chances to score. And like I said, Bobrovsky, he moves side to side, as well as anybody in the league. He's so good at getting there, and he doesn't give up on a play, he doesn't give up on a goal, or a chance, I should say. But there are pucks there for the Bruins. You know, there are pucks there for the taking, and they've got to make sure that they get there. And, you know, and then when you get there, you know, you can't relax on it, you know, because he's so good at you know, reacting and getting himself back in position to make a save. I mean, he's been outstanding this series, and Tuukka's matched him. It's been an entertaining series so far.
There's no doubt. I mean, it's exactly what we love about watching playoff hockey.
It's been a little of everything, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Whether it's the physicality, whether it's a little mistakes here and there that lead to entertainment and the chances both ways, and then the goaltenders are both stood on their head.
Even the heart-stopping stuff is ultimately entertaining at the end of the day, right? It's like this part of the fun of being a fan is the ups. If it was always ups, it wouldn't be as exciting. Let's open up with your calls here. Maria in Watertown is up first. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, gentlemen. Hey, what world are we living in when the Carolina Hurricanes are going to the Eastern Conference Finals? Did any one of you gentlemen even have that on your radar at some point during the season? This just speaks to how crazy this playoff has been. And I just wanted to quickly say about David Backes, although his hockey skill may not be what it was in his heyday, there has to be something that he's bringing on that bench and in that locker room that those younger players are feeding off of. And if that's what they need, if they need some type of a quote-unquote binky, then I'm happy to have him in the lineup. I just hope he has an opportunity to give Dubois a little bit of a butt-kicking. Tuukka Rask has been the Bruins' best penalty killer in this series. He has been tremendous throughout the series, but on the PK, he has been phenomenal. And Rule 38.4, gentlemen, is trash. How do four adult officials not see that puck go into the netting? And how is it okay to have a man-made object in any sport lead to a goal or a point for someone? That needs to be looked at and cleaned up. Short of that, you know, I think the game was a bit of a bleep show on the other night, but a win is a win. I don't really care if they keep pulling these wins out. Thanks for the time, guys.
All right, appreciate the call, Maria. And we're going to get into, obviously, the non-call that leads to the goal and the rules and all of that about what can be reviewed and what cannot. But I do want to kind of circle back to Tuukka Rask, and she brought up, you know, his work as, you know, their top penalty killer. I mean, the shorthanded chances that he's had to face and the breakaways and the odd man rushes that he's had to face and has come up huge for you when you've needed him. And there are a lot of people who will, you know, put Rask down and say, oh, he'll give up a bad goal at the wrong time. And there have been a ton of opportunities for him to do that in this series, and he's not doing it. Like, he has come up instead with huge saves when you've needed him to keep the momentum on your side, or to, you know, to not give up the shorthanded goal that's going to totally swing the game in Columbus's favor.
Well, Ryan, in addition to that, I think part of the issue for the Bruins is it's been who has been in the box at times during the series. So yeah. Brad Marchand, 8 penalty minutes in the series. Patrice Bergeron, 8 penalty minutes in the series. Whether you think the calls are merited or not, they've spent a lot of extra time in the penalty box. And because of that, when you have a penalty killer, especially the stature of a guy like Bergeron, even a guy like Marchand, we're talking about one of the elite players in the National Hockey League, it's going to make it harder for you to kill off those penalties. And that's what makes Rask's efforts even greater.
Same way I think it was in the double overtime game when Bergeron takes that penalty and they get stuck, right? I mean, they can't clear the puck. They're stuck in their own zone, long shift. Ends up burning them. It happened again the other night where the penalty killers, I remember seeing Chara in front of the net. He was so gassed at the end of that penalty kill. But you know what? It's your goalie is able to keep you in it.
That was the third period, I think you're talking about. That was a real good power. That was the only thing that Columbus, I thought, had going in the third period was that power play. And they had some good chances. Foligno had a point-blank chance. There were some other ones. You know, they've made some adjustments. They've talked about them. In fact, they've talked about them openly. We were talking about them on the air. They give up Atkinson over on the right wing side. They want to take away Jones's one timer. They want to take away the one timer from Panarin. They want to take away the seam pass. But that's going to leave other things open. And if you're going to allow Atkinson to kind of arc up high and get himself some space and get that shot away, then you've got to do a good job in front of the net after that initial shot is taken. And in game three, they got that goal, and that was Duchesne's goal after Foligno kept a puck alive in front. But that was second period. They were out there forever. They couldn't get the puck out. They couldn't get it 200 feet down the ice, and, you know, you couldn't get off the ice. So they were stuck out there, and it was almost a full 2 minutes that they were out there. So that's been an issue for them. They thought that they did a pretty good job of that during the season. As the season went on, they got better at it. But they've had some issues clearing the puck on the PK. So that's where Rask has to come up big. And, you know, you forget, I mean, as good as you want to say, okay, they hung in there on those PKs, they've given up, you know, the power play goal in double overtime in game two, power play goal in game three, which ultimately was the difference. You know, so that's still, you know, that can go either way right now, the PK. And that we talk about the power play needing to be cleaned up, but the PK, clearing the puck, making sure you get fresh bodies on the ice, that's been an issue for them.
617-779-0985. We'll get to more of your calls coming up as we get started here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show on a Saturday morning.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Chuck Sarai, Bob Beers, the home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning, 617-779-0985. When the line opens up, jump aboard with us. Get right back to your phone calls here. Let's go to Mark. Mark, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, I just wanted to say that I think people need to stop worrying about the goal off of the netting. I mean, they won 4-1, I believe the score was, and I think Tuukka knows that he's playing really well. And I don't think they're ever going to, in the history of the game, going to reverse a goal after the game's already been played, especially for a team that won the game. So I just think it's a non-factor. I think we need to move on. That's all.
All right. Appreciate it, Mark. I mean, look, ultimately, it works. It works out, right? I mean, it's the one goal that they gave up. Judd said it does change the tenor of that game, though. I mean, you're instead of being up 2-0 and, you know, everything's going your way, it turns it into a one-goal game going forward. Bruins were able to get past it, and they go on and win the game. That said, I mean, it's an egregious missed call. It's an egregious missed call that, as Tuukka Rask pointed out after the game, could ultimately swing the game, could ultimately swing the series. And for a league that has already had egregious calls cost teams a series, it's not what they needed. And the fact that, to me, it's a correctable mistake that because of a rule, the way the rule is written, it's uncorrectable, makes zero sense to me. Because it's not a judgment call. It's something that you could clearly see on the video after the fact. It could take you 10 seconds to change that and get it right, and they can't do it. And that's why I think not only Bruins fans, but if you're a hockey fan, you got to look at that and say, what are we doing here? What is the ultimate goal? Is it to get it right? Because if it's not, then why are we reviewing anything at all?
We're going there. All right. I was fine this morning. I was fine this morning, and then
you had moved past it.
I was good. And then I saw some quotes this morning reading the Boston Globe. Okay, here's Colin Campbell, the NHL Senior Vice President, Head of Hockey Operations. Quote, we're slaves to TV. We need the exact picture of it. In this case, the puck leaving the surface and hitting the netting. I'm not sure I could go to Columbus President John Davidson and the General Manager Jarmo Kekalainen and say 100% the puck hit the netting. Then he goes on and he said it happens like once in every 14,000 games. So when it rains, it pours. First of all, you could have made that determination without question that the puck left the surface. The fact that you're putting it on television, that you're slaves to television, and somehow it's their fault for not having this more readily available, I think is a cop-out. Moreover, it happened a couple of years ago. It happened in a January game where a rule was rectified, where the Detroit Red Wings fired a puck that hit the netting. It glanced off of, I think, Jonathan Quick at the time, and then hit him and went into the net. Now, they rewrote the rule. Why they have it written this way, I think, is under judgment. But in the bigger picture, what do we hear all the time? And it came up again from the commissioner of the National Hockey League, Gary Bettman, and it dealt with something else. I think it actually dealt with Marchand's punch to the back of Scott Harrington's head. That this is a fast game, and our officials have a very hard job, and it's difficult to keep track. So you have the technology to be able to help them. Give them the help that they need. This is not a judgment call. Help them out. Give them the time to make the right call so you have the right result.
I mean, it's just common sense.
It's all you're asking for.
It's common sense. I mean, all right. The officials should have seen it. They didn't. All right. Things are happening out there. We don't know what they're watching. You know, everybody's watching something different. They didn't see it. Okay. But it's common sense. Okay, it only happens once in a while. But
it happened in a playoff game national television. That's you have a chance to make it right.
You know, that was the whole thing a few years ago. We just want to get it right. You know, that was their theme. We just want to get it right. Well, they didn't. You know, I think it's pretty simple. You know, if there's such, you know, they, okay, so the call against Eakin with Vegas, I mean, that caused the major penalty, right? I don't know if Toronto can call in and say, look, that shouldn't have been a major. I don't think that
you don't want to be encroaching
there,
that much.
But
right.
Did a puck go out of play? Yeah, they should call down.
Yeah, one is a black and white issue. One is a judgment call.
Right,
like in baseball, fair or foul. you know, a home run or not a home run. That's what you have the ability to do. And you had two networks that had the ability and did show that that puck left the surface. Take the time to make the right call.
All right, let's go to Chris in Norwood. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. The officiating aside, I have to say that it's my belief, and maybe I'm a little biased because I'm a huge hockey fan, that the NHL, actually the teams, is one of the best leagues out there, because who would have expected the Hurricanes to sweep the Penguins, the Islanders? Who would have expected the Blue Jackets to beat Tampa Bay? All of the good teams, well, quote, good teams, the top teams, except for the Bruins, all got knocked out. It's amazing that we can have these results, because, you know, you look at football and you're like, oh, it's going to be this guy and that guy. In baseball, it seems to be the same teams and the salaries and all that. Hockey is the best sport as far as I'm concerned. Now, if they could get the officiating right, we'd be in, you know, seventh heaven.
Appreciate it, Chris. I mean, that particularly in the first round, obviously, where all the division winners get bounced, and now you go into the second round, and you're right. I mean, Carolina versus the Islanders. Like, I mean, I read that as a competitive series. I thought I was not expecting a sweep. I would have given Carolina a chance to win the series, but I wasn't thinking they were going to do it in four games.
Hey, everybody expected we'd be playing Tampa this round. So.
Absolutely. We've been talking about it all year, and you were the one who was telling us, hey, don't look too far ahead. We didn't know we didn't have to look too far ahead for Tampa.
It's been a crazy playoff already, and love it. I mean, it's been – and anybody that thinks that Columbus is that the Bruins should walk all over them, I don't know what they're watching. This is a good team. This is a good team, and they're deep, they're balanced, and, you know, Bruins got their hands full. It's just made it an entertaining playoff so far.
Well, what it shows really is the depth of the league. I mean, look, you've got some really good teams.
They came together at the right time.
Even the wild card teams on both sides, you know, both the East and the West are legitimate.
Well, there's a chance that the wild card teams in the East are going to move on.
Yeah. but they brought their game. I mean, Columbus is an interesting story in and of itself because of the moves they made at the deadline. And they went all in, but it was a disaster for the first few weeks after the deadline. It looked like it wasn't going to work.
Well, because you brought in some big-name players. I think that's always the difficulty when you bring in high-end players, because a lot of times it changes the roles for everybody else on the team. And that's what Columbus went through. Whatever you may think of Pierre-Luc Dubois, he was the team's number one center. Now you bring in Matt Duchene. Duchene becomes the number one center. You're moving Dubois down. You're changing all the combinations around. And even Duchene, when he talked, I think it was the last time we were in there for the regular season, he said it probably takes you at least 20 games for everybody's role to get set. And that's the other thing that Columbus has talked about. Why are we successful? Because everybody has finally bought into the role that they need to play on the ice game in and game out. But it takes a couple of months for that to take hold. But we're right at that point.
Duchene's the only one that's worked out for them right now. I mean, like McQuaid probably would have, but he's injured, so sure, he hasn't been able to play. DeZingle is not. I mean, he was a scratch. He's on a fourth line. I'll call it a fourth line because their minutes are like a fourth line, and they're barely playing. I mean, DeZingle, Wenberg, and Texier, I mean, they went primarily three lines the other day. You know, Boone Jenner's playing. He's having a great series.
Sure.
But they're not. They don't. Tortorella doesn't trust that line. And if he stays with that, you know, that unit as a group, then he doesn't trust that line. And they're playing three lines. And I don't know if that led to, you know, the Bruins dominating in the third period the way they did. You know the minutes. I'm not sure. You know, only they can answer that. But they didn't play a whole lot in that game, and certainly didn't play a whole lot in the third period. Texier took a penalty in the first period in the offensive zone, and he didn't play much after that.
Well, and you can add on to that, too, the fact that they decided to hold on to Panarin and Bobrovsky, because there were questions about the direction of those guys, too.
On this team, right. I mean, at the end of the year, they've got all kinds of questions to answer. So they are, like we said, they're all in at the deadline. Instead of moving guys, they just added guys who are going to become unrestricted free agents.
All right, let's get to Sports Hub headlines. Plenty more to come on this edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
All right, Sports Hub Hockey Show continues. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you. 617-779-0985. We're going to get to more of your calls coming up in this segment. But we talked about the goal that shouldn't have been. We've talked a little bit about the goaltender and his play, and which has been phenomenal. But one of the big stories of this series, and really of this postseason, has been the Bruins' top players, and in particular David Pastrnak, but also for chunks of this series as well, Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron, the scoring has not been there. They found the score sheet. Bergeron gets a couple of power play goals the other night.
He was excellent. He was Bergeron.
He looked like himself. Yeah. Exactly. David Pastrnak continues to not look like himself. He has a goal the other night, which came after he took a huge hit, early on in the shift, comes back down the other end, scores the goal, which was like, okay, great. Maybe that's what gets him off the schneid. And then we see more of the same, which is turnovers, bad plays, the play where he lost the puck off his stick and didn't even realize it. I mean, and at one point, after a turnover on the power play, and Bruce Cassidy pulled him onto the bench and kind of read him the riot act a little bit.
Well, Cassidy addressed that. There was a play that he thought he was soft on, where he wasn't hard on a puck, and it led to a chance going the other way. He's lost right now. I know he had a goal and an assist the other day, and it was great to see him on the score sheet, but when you see him trying to make plays and the puck's not even on his stick, or he's losing it, the one play he tried to make in the first period, the puck was off his stick for it seemed like a long time, but when you watch, a second or so, and he still tried to make a pass. He thought the puck was on his stick. And then he lost the puck in the third period when he was out high by the blue line. He looks like the guy that we saw a couple years ago that was getting knocked off pucks and getting knocked down. Now, he's getting checked hard. Don't get me wrong. They're going to play hard against him. I understand that. And he's still a younger guy. And Cassie tried to point that out the other day, that he's still trying to find his way as a superstar player in this league. But, he really looks... I don't even know how to describe it. Some of the things that he's doing, you don't see that from him. And he's really, he's got to fight his way through it. He's got to fight his way through this malaise or whatever that he's in and try to, or lack of confidence that he's got right now. He's saying no, that he's healthy. There's, he's not lacking confidence, but when you watch him play, it says differently. So I don't know whether it's health related or whether it's confidence related or what it is, but there's something that's way off.
It's so out of sorts. As you said, we're seeing him do things that we either haven't seen from him in a long time or have never seen from him. The types of plays and mistakes that he's making.
A couple years ago, before he got physically stronger and realized, okay, I'm a superstar player, he would get knocked off pucks and he would get knocked down and he would fall down and, the balance issues were there. But we've seen him take it to another level in a good way over the last couple of seasons. He's gotten stronger. Physically, he's been more involved. He's been able to take hits and bounce off them and continue to move forward and win pucks. And we haven't seen that from him, though, not nearly enough. There's been a few occasions. And, hey, he scores a one-timer the other day. Can't believe Bobrovsky almost got that, by the way.
I know.
But he scores a great one-timer the other day. He gets a one-timer on the Bergeron goal in the third period, which was a big help. But that was, from the left-wing circle, getting the puck on net. There was a rebound there. But there's so much more that we need to see from him. So, that's a big story for me right now, is where he's at and what he continues to do. And the Bruins are 2-2 right now in the second round of the playoffs with him struggling.
I also think this is just a part of the learning experience as well. So if we go back to last year in the playoffs, I think part of the reason the Bruins felt like he took off in those first two rounds was because of the experience he had in 2016-17. Well, right now, he's right at the point where he played in the playoffs last year. It's going to be the 12th game tonight. He played 12 games last year. And as you go further and further in the playoffs, because of the grind and the competition that you're playing against, there's some growth and experience that you need to go through. I think he's going through that right now, whereas guys like Bergeron and Marchand, they've been through that. I think the Blue Jackets have done a terrific job against Brad Marchand in particular. I thought there was a quote.
Seth Jones has been.
Seth Jones, David Savard.
Phenomenal series.
Been outstanding. Yeah.
Those guys have been terrific, but I forget who the quote came from. I don't know if it came from Bruce Cassidy or not, but I think it was Cassidy that mentioned that the Blue Jackets understand where our offense comes from. And because of that, I think they're trying to take away a lot of that. And for Brad Marchand, remember, 100 points, the bulk of those were assists. You know, he did have 30-plus goals, but he was also a setup guy for Pastrnak and for Bergeron. I think Bergeron has been terrific in the series. I think it's only Sergei Bobrovsky that's been able to keep him off the sheet.
He should have a few more goals.
He's generating some great looks and some great soft spots.
And Marchand's given him those passes.
He is.
On a few occasions.
I think he is. But I do think that between Jones and David Savard, who are playing on that side of the ice, they've been hard on Brad Marchand.
I mean, that said, look, this is a team that, you know, there was questions during the course of the season about their depth of scoring. They've gotten it in this series for the most part, especially early on in the series. Their guys further down the lineup were scoring. This team needs those three guys. I mean, the Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak, if they're not scoring on a regular basis, you're not going to be successful long-term in the postseason.
Well, but that said, you've got goals from, I don't have the numbers in front of me, I think it's 15 different guys, and you have 7 or 8 guys with multiple goals. That's what makes the Bruins such a threat. And they have 6 wins here in the playoffs. 6 different guys have game-winning goals. That's what makes the Bruins such a threat, and that's what you started to see at the tail end of the regular season. Once they got healthy, once they got Charlie Coyle into the lineup, you add Marcus Johansson here into the mix. How do you check this group? That's going to be a challenge going forward.
Corrali pitches in the other day. You know, Coyle's had a good playoff. So this is they have gotten contributions up and down the lineup. Achari had the short-handed goal. I mean, they rely heavily on – they want the depth. They want the balanced scoring. But the top guys, no, you're right. These are guys that and Marchand's had to fight his way through a lot in this series. That's a tough matchup right now. He's got, you know, Seth Jones on the right side, him on the left side, and he's out there just about every time against them. Savard's been good. Savard's been heavy, blocks a lot of shots, heavy along the wall. You know, he's a tough guy to get through as well. So they've had to fight their way through a lot of tight checking, and that's, I mean, Columbus has said, okay, look, they gave up some odd man things the other day. I thought it was in line changes. There was a couple breakaways in the second period, but they don't give up a lot of odd man situations. They're back. They're all back in the zone, and they pack it in. And then it's up to the Bruins to get the D more involved, which they have. They've gotten the D more active here recently, and that has to continue, especially in the offensive zone when they have control of the puck.
Is that something
to help the forwards out?
Is that matchup something that they can try to do a little bit more to avoid tonight on home ice? Seth Jones is going to play a lot.
He's going to play 30 minutes.
Yeah.
25 to 30 minutes.
He's going to be out there all the time. You know, maybe the odd shift here or there. Yes, if you're Bruce Cassidy, you can try and take advantage of that. But I think you also have to give some credit to Columbus's last pair on defense. I think if you looked at the series heading in and you look at guys like Scott Harrington, Adam Clendenning.
Harrington's played well.
Dean Kukan, you know, maybe you looked at that as a point that the Bruins could take advantage of. Maybe where Columbus was vulnerable, they've been steady.
Let's go to Alex in Brighton. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to talk about, you guys are talking about top players, and I think someone who's starting to show that he should be in that conversation is Carlo. It's his first playoff experience, and it seems like he's thriving. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I appreciate it. Brandon Carlo's been terrific.
And very good.
I mean, we you know, kind of joked about down the stretch of the regular season when he was going to get his first playoff opportunity. It's like, okay, well, you know, got to put him in bubble wrap and make sure he gets there. But once he's gotten there, he's been terrific all the way through this playoff. He's more than lived up to expectations.
Yeah, and you know what is he? So somebody that can move his feet, get back, get on pucks, move them out of the zone, make smart decisions defensively, be another penalty killer for them. You know, there's he's been very, very good here in this playoff. And he's a big guy with a nice, good long reach, but he can get there with his feet. And that's important, you know, going back for pucks and making smart decisions with those pucks. So I think he's been real good so far. You know, him and Chara tried to get a little bit more physical on Dubois. I thought last game, you know, he's been, you know, chirping a lot of guys. He's been in guys' faces, especially he's trying to get in Bergeron's grill. Mm-hmm. You know, those guys, anytime he was around the front of the net, he got a face full from those two guys. And I want to see that continue. Because, you know, I think you can get him way off his game. I think he's somebody that you can really and to the point where he'll take some dumb penalties. I'd like to see a little bit more of that. And even the goal that Panarin scored, Backes was chasing him down in the corner. I don't know if you saw that or not. It was off to the side. He was trying to get in Dubois' face in the corner when everybody was trying to find the puck. But Carlo and Chara, every time he came around the front of the net, you know, they were physical on him and they were trying to be more physical in front of the net. There were more altercations in front of the Bruins net last game, and I like that, after whistles. Mm-hmm. I know that they want to play in between the whistles, but I don't mind that part of the game, especially when DeBrusk is getting it from a couple different guys in front of their net.
Let's go to Tyler. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, how we doing, guys?
What's up?
So I have a concern and a question. When we have a power play, how is it that they make it look like we're the ones with the guy down? They're so aggressive, and is there anything we can do to neutralize that? Because it doesn't seem like our passing is anywhere near where it should be. My point on Panarin is, why is he constantly open for one-timers? It blows my mind. He's way too good to be left open just sitting there waiting to get a one-timer. And I feel like he gets at least 4 or 5 a game wide open. I just don't get it.
All right. Thanks for the call, Tyler.
Well, he's gotten far less the last two games. He got too many the first two games. Mm-hmm. And they've tried to take him away, especially on the PK. When the Bruins are killing a penalty, they've tried to take him away. They've made an adjustment to try to take away. It's not always going to work out, you know, because there's a loose puck after initial shot. You're trying to get back set up, and once in a while he's going to get that one timer. Just like, why does Ovechkin always get one timers? Why does Pastrnak always get one timers?
I mean, some guys are just
when he's
have
on
a
his game.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's guys that there's things that happen, but if they are in a setup and you're, you know, you're fresh on the ice and you're in that setup, they're trying to deny him the one-timer. And they're trying to deny the one-timer for Seth Jones. They'll allow Atkinson some space over on the right-wing side as a right shot to get that shot away. They want to take away the seam pass over to Panarin. You got to allow something on the PK against a good power play. And that's what they'll allow right now. But they definitely want to take away Panarin.
What is Columbus doing on their penalty kill, or is it more? Is it? There are some self-inflicted wounds there for the Bruins, definitely. But
they're pinching down and taking away options. So they're taking away, you know, Bergeron. They're not going to allow that little one timer from Bergeron. With Pastrnak on the left wing half wall, you know, whenever that puck is coming around to him, he's struggling right now. That's why he was taken off the power play. And they're crunching down on him, and they're taking away his options once the puck comes over to him. And he's struggling to find his game right now. And they put Krejci there. I'm curious to see what they do today.
I was just about to ask you, do you start?
Well, he's going to. So
you get your first power play tonight. Do you put Krejci out there? Because I would.
I think you'll give Pastrnak a chance initially. And if it's not going right, then Krejci's right there quickly. Because the power play has worked all year. Pastrnak's a guy that, okay, they keep talking about he's got to play through it. Okay, so if you bump him down to the second unit, they're not going to take him off the power play. Okay, but I think you got to give him another chance. Continue to give him another chance. But if he's not doing it, out.
Quick hook.
Come on, quick hook.
Yeah. I mean, because you're getting to the point where, yes. I mean, you keep giving him opportunities to play through it and play through it and play through it. And if he's not, I mean, at some point you have to say, okay, we got to do something different. This isn't working. And so
he's not the only reason. I mean, I think everybody's been a little off on the power play. Mm-hmm. Really do. I mean, it's, you know, they're giving up breakaways. They're mixing up, you know, giving pucks away out at the blue line. You know, you got one guy going one way, you got another guy going the other way. All of a sudden, they're on a breakaway. How many shorthanded chances? Well,
this isn't a new problem, but it's been exacerbated.
They fixed it for a while.
Yeah.
They fixed it for a while.
For a good chunk. I mean, they gave up a lot of shorthanded chances, a lot of shorthanded goals this season.
We've seen some puck management issues and fits and starts, and some of that has bled into their power play. You know, with Columbus, one of the things that they do well is they move well as a group. They challenge and they move well as a group. So it's incumbent upon the Bruins, and that's the hard thing. If you can go tape to tape, you're going to get somebody out of position. You're going to be able to find a soft spot. We'll see if the Bruins can do
that.
They
haven't done that enough.
All right, these guys are headed out of here.
They still had two power play goals last game.
Yeah, I know.
It's hard to believe.
It is. These guys are headed out of here because they got to get to morning skate, but we got another hour still to come on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We'll get to more of your calls coming up, 617-779-0985. Joe Haggerty and Billy Jaffe will join us as well during the next hour. The Sports Hub Hockey Show continues.
This is the Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hour number two of the Sports Hub Hockey Show from the Town Fair Tire Studios. Ryan Johnston with you. Judd Surratt and Bob Beers have taken their leave of us to head toward morning skate this morning as the Bruins and the Blue Jackets get ready for an all-important Game 5 tonight at the Garden. Nice 7:15 face-off tonight, too. Thank you to the folks at NBC and the Kentucky Derby. They want to get this thing on right after the horse race, so we get an early start as opposed to the 8 o'clock, really, it's closer to 8:30, double overtime game that goes after midnight that we got last Saturday. We get an earlier start tonight, and that does not excuse the fans from not being properly lubricated prior to this game. You have all day. You should be working on that right now, as a matter of fact, getting ready to bring the thunder tonight, as hopefully the Bruins are as well. We welcome in now Joe Haggerty of NBC Sports Boston. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good morning, Hags.
Hey, Ryan. I'll accept your thanks on behalf of the entire NBC family, so there you go.
That's good. It's because I'm sure you are in those meetings trying to determine what would be the best face-off time, so let them know I appreciate the 7:15 start. Even on a Saturday night, some of us old men can't be staying up. You know, I got to work in the morning. What are you going to do?
I got a lot of clout in those high-level executive meetings, no question about it. Absolutely. Anything to make, you know what? It makes my life easier and happier when it's 7:15, too, so it works out for everybody.
All right, so, you know, over the course of the first hour, we talked about a number of different things, but to me, one of the biggest things in this series continues to be what the hell has happened to David Pastrnak? And, you know, look, the Bruins won, and he scored a goal the other night, but clearly he still was not himself. I mean, is Bruce Cassidy losing patience at all, do you think, with one of his star players here? Do you think there will be a much quicker hook, as we were kind of intimating in the last segment, as they look at him on the power play, you know, as opposed to maybe putting Krejci out there? Like, what do you think the dynamic is for Bruce Cassidy as he approaches David Krejci tonight?
Yeah,
David Pastrnak tonight. Excuse me.
Yeah, I think there's going to be. You know, there has to be. Look, do you expect to see less David Pastrnak on the ice if the Bruins are protecting a one goal lead in the third period of these games? Absolutely, and they should. I mean, based on what we've seen, you know, the fanning on shots and creating odd man rushes and breakaways going the other way, and you know the turnovers where he's playing on his backhand at points where he needs to be stronger on the puck. In the playoffs, he needs to play a different way and, you know, be harder to play against in those situations and, you know, just keep the puck on his stick. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And as far as the power play goes, I think that goes right along with it. You know, I don't think there's any question in my mind that something's wrong with him physically. You know, just given the stuff that we've seen, obviously Columbus has been very hard on him and very physical, and I think that's part of it. But I also think there's just something not right with him. He still doesn't look right shooting the puck. He did score that goal on a one-timer at the beginning of the game, and he, you know, set up another one with a shot that, that Bergeron scored on in close. But I just something seems very wrong with him handling the puck. Something seems very wrong with him shooting the puck. Certainly, he's not a guy that's played through injuries a ton in his young career. So, you know, this may be an adjustment for him trying to figure all that out, what he can do, what he can't do, you know, what he's capable of, how he needs to approach it. And I think that's part of the patience and sort of the learning curve here. But, you know, when you see him fan on shots twice in a game like we did in that last game, that's just so unlike him. I've never seen that before out of him before. You just have to feel like something's wrong with one of his hands, and that's affecting, you know, his shooting, and it's affecting everything else. So, you know, because of that, and because clearly he's a lessened player when he's out there, and, you know, he's a liability for turnovers when he's out there for those reasons and more, I do think there's going to be less patience than there should. Now, is he still going to get regular shifts towards the beginning and when they're trying to get up on top offensively and you know, the chances there for him to score a goal early and get the Bruins the advantage like he did in game four? Sure, absolutely. But, you know, I think Bruce Cassidy is going to change and adjust his coaching style when they're protecting leads in the third period. And I think he should for his personnel. You know, this is the point in the season when you have to hang on to those leads by any means necessary, and you're coaching for one game rather than the long haul of a season. And that means, you know, doing whatever you have to do.
Prior to the start of the hockey show this morning, I was talking a little bit about David Backes because we, you know, with some callers saying, I want to make sure that Backes is still going to be in the lineup tonight. And I think that's the expectation, is that there won't be any significant lineup changes going into this one after the Bruins won game four. But it struck me as funny, Hags, that David Backes, who takes a beating from a lot of fans because of his $6 million salary and because he hasn't, you know, lived up to expectations when he came here a few years ago, is suddenly now considered a guy that you have to get into the lineup in these big games because his presence, it means that much. It's just hysterical after seeing him get killed around here for 3 years that people now look at him because of this transformation that he's undergone in the last couple of months, as I can't, you know, when he sits out, it's like, oh, I don't know if that's the right move. I can't believe they're not going to play him tonight. They need his physicality. Is David Backes that big of a deal for this team?
I think he is in spurts, you know, and I think you can be both things, right? You can still be an effective player in situations and have a horrendous contract and have a contract that's onerous and is going to give the team salary cap problems. I think both things are certainly possible at the same time. And, you know, David Backes was a very good player when he came here. Obviously, he has not been that same player since he's gotten here. But, like, in this series against the Blue Jackets, a physical team that's not going to play fast-forward, run-and-gun hockey like the Maple Leafs did, where it's, you know, as David Backes himself said after Game 4, it's kind of a man's game on the ice, where there's a lot of hitting, there's a lot of battles being won and lost, and, you know, a big, strong player with physicality that can get to the front of the net, you know, could help you against a guy like Bobrovsky, where you can screen him and get rebounds and make him feel a little more uncomfortable and kind of bump him around a little bit. This is the kind of series that plays right into what David Backes still does very well and how he can help them. And, you know, I do think, though, what you're going to see out of him is what we've seen so far, which is, he will help you in spurts, but then I think he also has to not play in spurts to sort of regain his legs and, you know, not play for a few days to make sure when he gets back in there that his skating legs are as good as they could possibly be at this point in his career at 34 years old. And I think that's what we've seen in a couple of instances here. He gives you that quick impact when he comes back in, when he hasn't played for a few days, has the juice in his skating legs. But then when you put him back in the lineup and he starts skating game after game, he kind of loses that again. And, you know, he's chasing the play and he's not as effective anymore. So I think what we've seen in the first couple of rounds is probably what we're going to see out of Backes and what he's going to give to the Bruins, you know, for the rest of their playoff run, which is, you know, he can play a few games, then he's probably going to be out of the lineup. And then, you know, when Bruce Cassidy and the Bruins need a jolt, need some physicality, need some energy, need all the things he can bring, then you put him back in there and it can give you that. It's, you know, an interesting weapon that you have at your disposal. you know, where you're not necessarily going to play him in every single game, but you can pick your spots with him when you're going to put him in. And, you know, if he continues to be effective, you leave him in there for as long as he does. And then, you know, you don't mind giving him the hook when he can't, when he's not up to par anymore. And, you know, the physicality, the leadership, the intangibles, all the stuff that you're talking about, the vocal willingness to you know, either talk players up or call them out when it's needed on the bench and in the dressing room. That's also an extremely important factor in him being out there as well for a team that doesn't always have a ton of those guys that are going to be vocal in that way. And I think they miss that part of him when he's not out there and suiting up for the lineup. So, you know, it's always going to be a bad contract. I think no matter what happens, that's going to be the case. But the fact that he can still help them in the playoffs and that he's being looked at points as, you know, a guy that can be a game changer when you put him back in there, I think at least they're getting that out of him rather than nothing at all, which would be a complete disaster.
After scoring 4 goals in game 4, have the Bruins solved Sergei Bobrovsky?
I don't think so. I mean, they did a good job in that last game. They put a lot of pressure on him. In game 3, they decided they're just going to start putting every shot they could on the net and just, you know, not be as selective and really just, you know, funnel pucks and throw volume at him. And it started to work in game 3. At least you saw the chances there. They got some pucks through in game 4. You know, it's great to see 2 goals out of Patrice Bergeron. And, you know, maybe that starts him on a run offensively as far as production goes, and he ramps it up a little bit. But, I mean, Bobrovsky's still an outstanding goalie. They're still going to have a hard time scoring against him. They're still going to have to work extremely hard to get goals against him. I just don't see him losing it in the middle of the series. He's not that kind of goalie. The one thing I think you can point to and credit the Bruins and Tuukka Rask for is that, you know, he outplayed them in game 4. And if he can continue to do that for the rest of the series, even if Bobrovsky's at his best, if Tuukka can play that way, you know, it's going to be at least even, if not edge Bruins, as far as between the pipes go. And just look at the save percentage. Tuukka's at .942 in the series. He's played extremely well. It's a better save percentage than Bobrovsky has in this series. So, you know, right now, I think the worry is less about Bobrovsky and more about just, you know, playing the way the Bruins have to and making sure that Tuukka continues to play as he has through this entire postseason. Because, you know, he's starting to change opinions, Tuukka Rask, is about what he is as a goalie, what he is as a big game goalie, how much you can depend on him in the playoffs, all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, let's talk as much about Tuukka Rask as we're talking about Bobrovsky, right? I know it's funny to hear me say that.
But, I was just going to say, I didn't think we'd be here this point. I didn't think we'd be getting to this point where you're taking your hat off to Tuukka, but he's been phenomenal. He's been everything you could have asked for. And you know, as we were talking about earlier, I mean, there have been so many times, particularly with the turnovers on the power play and whatnot, and the shorthanded chances that Columbus has had, they've had so many opportunities where they could have really swung the momentum of games, and he's come up with a big save almost every single time.
He has, and he has not been the reason the Bruins have lost any of the games that they've lost in the playoffs. Yes, he's had a soft goal or two, especially like at points in the Toronto series. There's a couple of goals you can point to and say he probably should have had that, but he's not been the reason that they've lost any game. He was excellent in game 7, which has historically been a bugaboo for him against Toronto. He was very good in that game, and he needed to be awesome in game 4 against Columbus the other night, and he was. And he outplayed Bobrovsky, who has been fantastic in this series, and he has done absolutely everything that you've asked of him. And maybe, you know, maybe he just wanted to shut up the critics. Maybe he's, you know, finally wanted to, once and for all, prove that he can be a big game goalie that can, you know, lead his team through the playoffs. Maybe it's about the rest that he got from Halak during the regular season and the fact that, you know, Halak is right there if he does falter in the playoffs. Maybe all that stuff has pushed him to a different level. You know, maybe he's just finally getting it as far as the big game stuff goes and it's not, you know, affecting his performance like it maybe it did in the past. Whatever it is, he needs to keep doing it. Because if he can continue to play this way, even though the Bruins are being pressed in these series, they're going to have a chance and should win every single one. Because if they're getting goaltending like that, they've got a good enough team, they should beat anybody.
All right, so best of 3 series is what's left. What's your level of confidence in the Bruins winning this series?
I have confidence they're going to win because, you know, they've been there before. They've shown incredible resilience when their backs are against the wall in this postseason. And, you know, when they've lost games and they've had to win games, they've won those games. And I think we'll continue to see that. against Columbus. And, you know, unfortunately, it's probably going to take seven games. It seems like it's going to be that kind of a series. And really, the problem with that, in my mind, is seven games against Toronto, seven games against Columbus, an extremely physical series that you can tell is taking a piece out of them, how hard they have to play against Columbus. If you want to win the Cup, my opinion, you really need a short series in the first couple of rounds. You're going to be facing, if you win, a Carolina team that's, you know, going to be very rested, and they're going to have a hard time against them because of that. They're going to have a hard time winning all these rounds because of how hard they've worked in the first couple of rounds. But, you know, that's a luxury problem for another day. Obviously, they're concentrating on Columbus right now. But, you know, long term, you kind of wonder how this is going to impact them, and the fact that they've had two very taxing series to start things off here.
All right, Hags, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the game tonight.
You got it, Ryan. Take care, bud.
Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston, joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. You want to jump in with some calls? Now would be a good time. 617-779-0985. Billy Jaffe should join us in the final half hour, and we'll get his thoughts on this series and the rest of the NHL as well as we continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
As we continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show, Ryan Johnston here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. We will take a look at some of the other things going on around the NHL playoffs, including Carolina Hurricanes sweeping the New York Islanders out of the playoffs. Carolina, if the Bruins make it through this series, it's going to be the same thing. A well-rested team is going to be waiting for them. As Columbus was. So, you know, for all those who have been saying, oh, path is wide open. You know, you watch that first round, it's like, well, Tampa gets swept out. Washington gets knocked out. You look at it, you know, around the league and go, Western Conference, Calgary gets knocked out. Like, all the division winners are out. And people looked at it and said, path is clear. I think I heard Adam Jones talking about it the other day. Path will never be as wide open as it is right now. You know, the depth of this league is on display. The fact that your teams that are, you know, seventh or eighth best records in their conferences are sweeping teams. Not only beating them, sweeping teams out of the playoffs. There's a lot of depth. The Columbus Blue Jackets are a wild card team. They're the eighth best team in the East. And you know what? They're giving you fits the same way they did Tampa, because they work hard. They bust their ass. They do all the little things that you need to do in the playoffs. That's a big reason for their success. I mean, a team that plays for John Tortorella, when they're playing the way he wants you to play, they're physical, they hit, they block shots. They're active sticks. They're in passing lanes. They disrupt you at every turn. And you look around the league, that's the kind of stuff that can win you playoff games. All right, a team that is willing to do the work, that is willing to do all the little things, that's willing to get bodies to the net. You know, it's a big part of the reason why I think the Bruins were struggling to score goals in the first three games of this series. Was, you know, as Bob Beers mentioned earlier, Bobrovsky's he gives up rebounds. They're there. But you got to have people who are willing to get to those dirty areas to take advantage. You got to have guys who are willing to get knocked on their ass in order to score a goal. There hasn't been enough of that. There wasn't enough of that in the first three games. Game four, they came out and it was clear. We just got to shoot. Right? We just got to shoot. Get the puck on net. And I think they ended up with 46 shots on goal the other night, I think it was. You know, it's four goals on 46 shots is not a tremendous output, but it was by far better than they had been getting. And part of it was, again, because
on power plays. They're able to get the puck to the net. They're able to get Bergeron in front, get him opportunities. You know, they did more of what they need to do. And then, of course, the goal that extended the lead in the third period, the Corrali goal, was grinder central, right? It's Backes, it's Nordstrom, it's like keep the puck in, keep the pressure on, long shift in the Columbus defensive zone, and then eventually cashes in. It's the classic goal that you get from fourth line guys. And they got it, and it's, you know, it helps take them to the win. Let's go to Don, who's been hanging on a while. Don, appreciate you your patience. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Thanks, Ryan, for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a couple quick points. Let's play devil's advocate and say that the Bruins shoot that puck up in the net in Columbus, and it gets allowed. Just think of the mayhem with Torts and all the CBJ fans. If that makes that game 3-0, and what would have happened? And then alternatively, with all the Tuukka Rask haters in Boston, you know, they say he's an elite goaltender. He makes all this money. He has to steal you a game. That's the quote I keep hearing. He has to steal you a game. Well, he just stole you a game. And what I really was disappointed that it wasn't a shutout because of that off the net play. And I think Tuukka really deserved that shutout for his personal stats as well as the team win. So thanks for letting me talk to you.
I appreciate it. And look, I think that it's clear to fans in Boston that Tuukka Rask deserved a shutout the other night. I think I've heard a number of people say that over the course of the last, 36 hours or whatever it's been. I think it's pretty clear that people understand that he pitched a shutout. If the league does the right thing there, that he winds up likely with a shutout in that game. And he's come up so huge for you. I mean, look, every time that your heart is in your throat because they just turn the puck over at the offensive blue line and there's a 2-on-1 or a clear breakaway coming back the other way, or you give up a penalty shot on that power play the other night because the guys on your power play aren't able to handle the puck, or David Pastrnak just, you know, complete brain fart, loses the puck, doesn't realize it, and it's coming the other way. Every time it's happened, every time that happens, Tuukka Rask has come up big for you. Every time. I mean, stopping that penalty shot goal the other night, it's like that's such a huge turn of momentum in that game. If Columbus scores there, it's an entirely different game the rest of the way. The same way it could have been an entirely different game after the Panarin goal. And the Bruins, you know, again, doesn't mean there weren't some warts in the game, but they shook it off. They played better. They did what they needed to do to win it. John is up next. John, you're on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hi, Ryan. How you doing?
What's going on?
Just had a quick observation about that arena in Columbus. You know, they always talk about the fans standing for most of the game.
Yeah.
I've actually been to that arena to see a concert, and those seats are so uncomfortable, Ryan.
So they're not just standing up because they're excited?
Right.
Gotcha.
Right. The other thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, the big bugaboo for the Bruins this playoff series and for a long time now is their inability to clear the puck out of their own defensive zone. And I was wondering, you know, isn't that something that they can improve on quickly?
It's something that I think it did improve on somewhat in game 4, and it definitely needs to continue to improve because they have had some, golden chances where, again, it's just very un-Bruin-like. For a team that prides itself on its team defense and everybody chipping in in various ways defensively, like, we're just not used to seeing those types of mental mistakes, because that's what it feels like, mental mistakes, right? I mean, guys, I mean, going back to early in the series and, you know, the unforced error by Coyle and things like that in the defensive zone, or even a guy like Chara gets the puck in the, you know, in the defensive slot with a chance to clear it and whiffs on it, or, doesn't get it out, doesn't put enough oomph behind it, and it gets stopped at the blue line and kept in and keeps the play going. We have seen way too much of that, way too much of it. Again, I think more, but it needs to keep getting better. It needs to be better tonight than it was in game four for them to have long-term success. All right, we've got another half hour to go. Tim McCone's got Sports Hub headlines, and we will be talking to Billy Jaffe coming up next.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub Hockey Show as we take you up to 11 o'clock. Bruins and Blue Jackets Game 5 at the Garden tonight. 7:15 face-off. You'll hear it right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub with Judd and Bob, who left us a little while ago to head over to Morning Skate, which is also, I'm sure, where we find Billy Jaffe of Nesson. He joins us now on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning. Hello there, RJ. How are you?
Doing well. I'll ask you, after what you've seen over the course of the first four games of this series, where's your confidence level in what's now a best of three?
I think I feel pretty good. But these playoffs have made many of us so-called analyst experts, I think, doubt our insight ability. I mean, they've just been so spectacularly wild and unpredictable that it's sometimes hard to really figure out. Where's my confidence level, though? After last game and last third period, RJ, that's where I get confidence from. If that third period is an indication of where the Bruins are at, then I'm like, okay, still going to be tough. Still going to be tough. Wouldn't shock me at all if we see seven here. But it gives me an indicator, at least some hope, that they're in the right place. They went to that, we're going to win this game mentality. And they weren't, you know, burping up the puck. They weren't taking, you know, foolish chances or penalties. And, yeah, I mean, look, you're going to get chances. Chances happen. Pushes happen from the opponent. But I like their mentality. I love the Corrali goal. That was just classic, you know, Corrali and his line mates and mentality getting it in. That sealed the deal there. And so that gives me confidence. With all that said, in this entire playoff run, for all teams, we've seen very little momentum game to game. Incredibly little momentum game to game. So, you know, obviously tonight will tell us a story.
Well, so much of this from the vantage point of Bruins fans, obviously, is about, you know, the Bruins, and they're not, you know, their top players haven't been performing well for the lion's share of this series. From a more, you know, looking at it from a more neutral perspective, how much of this has been about Columbus raising their game as they got closer to and then into the playoffs and what they have done well in this series as opposed to what the Bruins have done poorly?
I think that there's a good amount of the Columbus factor involved. I do. With that said, I still think some of the best Bruins players have tried to do things too often that have allowed Columbus to continue doing that. Columbus is great defense, stick work, positioning, back pressure, etc., especially against the big boys, the 88s, the 63s, and at times, you know, the 37s. Obviously, Bergeron came through the other night and has been spectacular in the faceoff circle lately. But I feel like the Bruins, you have to tip your hat or helmet, I guess, to Columbus. But I do think that some of those big boys haven't maybe at times helped themselves. And a few other times where they have helped themselves, the Bruins have gotten offensive zone time, they've gotten some possession, they've gotten a couple of opportunities, but not enough. Columbus has been playing really good, strong, intense, determined playoff hockey. They have. They've done a lot of good stuff, Ryan. They have. I mean, we've shown, you know, I was at the NHL Network all week. We showed a couple of times the routes that they're taking, where they're pushing the Bruins' big guys into, you know, what kind of uncomfortable situations they're doing. And you have to say, that's hockey, you know, and that's part of it. Now the chess match continues. And, you know, does last game where Pastrnak, while not looking great overall, gets a goal and gets involved, you know, does that make him feel that much better? You know, the whole Marchand thing, does he feel some success from last game? Bergeron obviously getting points. We'll see if that translates to this game too.
What's your opinion on what's going on with David Pastrnak in this postseason?
My opinion is that I don't know if he's injured. I legitimately don't know if he's injured more. And, you know, it could come out that, you know, he's totally got something going on. I can tell you this from an observer's perspective. He's just thinking way too much. You know, Pasta's at his greatest. He's that artist that, you know, when he has the canvas or she has that canvas, kind of has a, you know, they've got a box full of paints, but they don't know what they're going to paint, and it just kind of comes to them. We've talked about it, RJ. That's when he's at his finest, when we see the creativity that works. The fear factor in that is that sometimes you can try and be too creative, and you don't create a Picasso. You know what I mean? You don't create a beautiful picture. And that's where I think he's at right now. If he's injured, again, we don't know. I don't know. But if he's not, I just think he's thinking too much. He wants to do so much. He's trying to do so much. He's obviously having something hard time handling the puck. I mean, how many times has he overhandled or missed it the other night when he was just stick handling and he thought he had it on his stick? That to me says maybe there's something's wrong because he didn't have feel for the puck right there. Then again, by the way, RJ, we saw a couple of other players do the same thing the other night. I don't know if you picked up on that or not. There was a couple, both Blue Jackets and Bruins, that kind of skated, and they thought they had the puck, and a half a second later, they realized they didn't. So it was interesting. But anyways, I think overall he's trying to do too much, think too much, and it's impacted his game.
All right, so you are our kind of go-between, generally between the league and the officials and all of that. So, I mean, this play, we haven't tried to harp on it too much this morning, but you got to talk about this, you know, this goal that Columbus scores the other night. By the letter of the law, the league does what they do, which is say, look, this isn't a reviewable play. I guess I've not been able to figure out why it's not a reviewable play. I know what the rule says. I just don't know why the rule was ever written like that.
Well, that's a whole nother, I mean, you know, that's a whole other conversation. I can't answer that. My guess is the rule was written like that. Well, I know why the rule was changed to be written like that, because of a goal a couple of years ago between L.A. and Detroit. Puck went very high. I'm going to say 20 feet up into the air high, maybe even higher. Hit up the netting, came back down, hit the L.A. goaltender, I believe it was Jonathan Quick, in the butt and went into the net, directly up the netting. And so that was allowed. It was a good goal in that game. The refs didn't see it hit the mesh, et cetera. Long story short, the NHL makes a rule. It can't go directly into the net off that. Look, your question is valid. It's a flawedly, is that the proper word? It's an improperly worded rule.
I like flawedly. I'm going to use that.
Okay, I think it's flawedly. I think it's a flawed rule or a flawed written rule. Because we're all together. Now, will they change it? I don't know. I mean, and here, this becomes the other thing, too. Now you've got the terms direct and immediate. Okay, well, that was still, in my book, directly, you know, into the net, even though there was a pass there. But by the letter of the law, as you said, it was a correct call made on the letter of the law. It was. Should it be changed? Yes. Will it be changed? That's up to the NHL. It's not up to Colin Campbell and Gary Bettman. They can suggest it. It becomes up to the GMs, the owners and the GMs. You know, how are the rules? And that's where the GMs come into play.
Well, we've seen, you know, in the past, at times, the NHL has made emergency rule changes, right? They just decide, look, we have to fix this, and we have to fix it now in case it were to come up again later in the playoffs. And I guess that's kind of what I'm looking for. It's, you know, as Tuukka Rask said, you don't want that happening in Game 7 or in an overtime where it's going to potentially decide a series like that when it's clearly something that you can fix. And well, you know, if you're going to have replay, you ought to be willing to fix the things that you can fix.
You're absolutely right, and you know how much I despise replay. This is one that seems like a no-brainer, right? We just keep adding things to it. So we're going to have replay because replay's here to stay. I'm so fearful that we're going to be replaying everything because quote-unquote easy fixes, puck off netting, easy fix. Puck shot out of play to make sure it didn't hit glass or did hit glass, easy fix, right? High stick infractions, making sure it's your team stick, the opponent's team stick, not your own stick that hits a player. The problem is we start replaying ourselves into replay death. That's the problem. Anyways, let me get off that soapbox. It's an easy fix. Could they change it come playoffs? Yes. Again, they would need the support of the NHL's teams, the general managers, to do that. And could it happen? Sure. I don't feel like it's going to, Ryan. What do I know? I mean, I have not. I just got back into town late last night from the NHL Network, and I haven't spoken to a GM about it yet. The vibe, just, it doesn't feel like it's going to be changed. The question then becomes, and not to get too off track, what becomes now, let's say it bounces off the mesh. Let's say they play 20 seconds in the offensive zone and the opponent gets the puck, or the defending team gets the puck, they can't clear it, they keep it in, they keep playing. Does it be treated just like an offside violation? Maybe. I don't know. But, you know, what's the delineation? What's the determining factor? It's more of rhetorical. I'm not asking you to give me an answer, but that's going to come
a
big question.
I'll give you an answer. My answer would be that as soon as the defensive team takes possession of the puck, that wipes it out. You know, for me, it's like, okay, the moment you get the opportunity to clear the puck, then, you know, then we can kind of look, go back and say, okay, well, things have evened out sufficiently at that point. I mean, I kind of look at the offsides the same way, that, you know, if the defensive team has had multiple chances to clear the puck and they haven't done it, then the offside that started the thing is long since, you know, out of the equation for me.
Well, you continue to open the Pandora hockey box a little bit, and you keep saying, well, what's possession? Well, is it like a penalty possession where some referees blow it right away when the player barely touches it, or is it full, you know what I mean?
Sure.
It becomes like, but anyways, I think we're all in this together. We always say we want to get things right. There's questions that come up. For instance, how did four sets of eyes miss that? And I got to tell you, some black mesh, black puck bouncing out, sometimes you lose it. Dark jerseys, et cetera. I'm not defending the refs at all. I'm saying you're going to make mistakes, so. You know, did it touch it? Did it not? You know, how high up did it get it? And did it look like it hit the glass and then the netting moved a little bit to one of the officials? I don't know. I haven't talked to them yet. But
well, just the fact of the matter, I mean, watching the game the other night, they had to, like, zoom way in and all of that. I mean, it wasn't readily apparent. Nope. It was apparent that nobody knew where the puck was at one point. I mean, it went up into the air, and all the guys were kind of looking around in confusion as to where the puck was.
Right.
But
right.
there wasn't any demonstrative move on behalf of the Bruins players either to point up and say, hey, the puck went out of play. I'm not sure too many people on the ice knew.
They didn't. In fact, now, again, if somebody on Columbus did, they're saying nothing for obvious reasons, even though the video don't lie. I mean, we all know that it did now. Tuukka didn't know where it was. He thought it could have gone out, but he didn't know. You see McAvoy raise his left hand as if to say to Tuukka, he was basically looking at Tuukka, I don't know where it is.
Right.
He wasn't saying it was out. So I'm with you. Nobody saw that it was out. It was, you know, replay helps out, but the officials didn't see it. The players didn't see it. You know, the great news is, and I know I'm sure you guys have talked about it, it didn't impact the outcome of the game for a Bruins fan and Bruins faithful, thankfully.
All right, let's quickly just go around some of what else is happening, including Carolina finishes a sweep of the Islanders last night. We had a caller earlier ask, you know, who saw this one coming?
Nobody.
Carolina Hurricanes are in the Eastern Conference Finals, and they're going to be rested when it starts. I asked you last week, I think, about that series, about, you know, like, what do we expect here? And there's no way anybody expected that the Islanders were going to get steamrolled like that.
No, and, you know, the first three games were basically one-goal games. You know, you had some empty netters in game three, but they were. They were one-goal games in one and two, and then in three, the same type of thing. Now they get plowed in game four, given the way that the Canes and the Caniacs, the arena was going absolutely crazy. The team is relentless in their pursuit, and it's not like this frenetic pursuit. It's smart, relentless pursuit, if that makes sense to you, RJ. That's what Rod Brind'Amour wants. He wants pucks on net. Their shooting percentage has gone up tremendously in the playoffs than what it did in the regular season. They've got an amazing back end led by Jacob Slavin, who has always been considered a burgeoning defenseman, but he's having, just like Seth Jones, on a national or international stage, his hockey coming out party right now. I mean, right now you could argue, and with ease, with absolute ease, if you did a day-by-day, and we kind of do this in fun at the NHL Network, a day-by-day, who's your Conn Smythe, Jacob Slavin's in the top two, top three for sure, if not top two right now. For Conn Smythe. I mean, he's been that good as a defender there. Brett Pesci has been outstanding along. You know, Falk has been really good. He has some defensive issues here and there, but he's been really good. The team plays with some good pace up front. Sebastian Aho, Teuvo Teravainen, highly underrated, undervalued. He scored a goal and an assist last night. They're rolling. And you know what they have? They have that it believability factor right now. They're playing for the coach. They love Rod Brind'Amour. Love him. He's one of them. He's a player's coach. No punches. He's got Justin Williams, and he's got Jordan Staal leading the way in the locker room. They've got it right now, and they should not be looked past right now.
We'll finish up on this. Wild card, obviously, advancing to the Eastern Conference Finals. The Blue Jackets are still alive. The other two wild cards out west, Dallas and Colorado, are either tied or leading their series. Is there a kind of like one it factor that, you know, that those teams have that is allowing them to advance when a lot of people would not have predicted it?
One it factor. I mean, a lot of times people will say playing the high-intensity games in the last couple of weeks of the season gets you ready for the playoffs. And I think that there's a factor to that, especially in the first round. But I do think that you realize that these teams, especially, you know, Montgomery is a new coach this year. Bednar's not a new coach, but he's getting mature performances out of his young players there. And he's getting great goaltending from a first-time starter, a regular starter in Grubauer, meaning he started at times here and there, but really it's his net right now. I think when you just look at it, these teams have probably more depth than people realize, and they're all led in many ways by great defense. That might be the big common factor. Heiskanen is a great defenseman. Klingberg is playing beautifully in Dallas. You've got the youngsters, Cale Makar and Girard and Tyson Berry in Colorado. You got Seth Jones in Columbus, and you know what I mean? Those guys make a huge factor.
All right, Billy, we appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the game tonight.
All right, doing radio as well, a different radio, a national radio, but you know what? Looking forward to it. Not in competition. Nessun, 6 o'clock pregame, full hour as well tonight.
Excellent. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Billy.
See you guys.
He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline for Morning Skate this morning. That's going to do it for this edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Again, 6:30 pregame show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub tonight with Judd and Bob on the call. 7:15 is the face-off over at the Garden. And I will be back tomorrow morning from 9 until 1 for Johnston and Flynn. We'll have a full recap of tonight's game. Enjoy it. Get lubed up. You got plenty of time to be ready for face-off tonight. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Mike Palmer, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.